good news and bad news for the UNLV Rebels this weekend. The UNLV football team pulls off what I think was the biggest upset of week 11 in college football. Almost concurrently, however, to UNLV basketball going down to Loyola Marymount. We'll talk about both of those today on the Rebel Room. I'm Case Kiefer alongside the experts, the ones who were there firsthand, Ray Brewer and Mike Grimala. And since I guess it's my reputation, as I often say, to be the negative one on this podcast, and because we're having to muzzle Ray Brewer over here, he's so fired up, we got to start with the bad, the loss to Loyola Marymount. What'd you see, Bray?
Let me ask you this real fast. Raise your hand if, and I'm not talking.
Not great on an audio medium, but no, we'll go with it.
No, I'm not talking about Grimala and Kiefer. Oh, okay. Raise your hand out there if you're listening to the Rebel Room. If you had Rebel basketball losing to Loyola and Rebel football winning at San Diego State, that's quite the two-teamer.
Yeah, exactly. Not the fortunes you were expecting. If we were saying good news and bad news, you thought it'd be the other way.
Let me ask you first thing, a specific question, because you were there. Tell me about the crowd at the Thomas and Mack Center.
I pegged it. I don't know what the announced was, but I pegged it as about...
I think it was about 8,000.
Oh, the announced was 8,000?
Yeah, that's what I saw on Twitter.
Oh, wow.
I didn't see the announced, but you told me 9,000. Yeah, the next day I saw the pictures, and I was like, it looks like there might be 900. I didn't know where you got the 9,000
from. Well, you
probably
got a picture in one of the blank sections. No, okay. Somebody texted me. Maybe it was my dad who's all, you think I'm fired up? and I said, no, I felt like about 9. But the thing is it was a very, very quiet 9. And it was Chet Buchanan's return to be the MC. And he was even a little taken back because you remember when they play the fight song at the beginning of the game, you're supposed to stand up and go, you, Ed. Oh, right? And yeah. He's like, okay, by the end of the season, everybody will be standing singing the fight song and everybody will know it. And everybody just kind of looked at him like, yeah, all right, come on, hurry up.
it's interesting because UNLV, if you put 9,000 people into a cozy little, 10,000-seat college basketball arena, that's a good home court advantage. Like, you'll get some energy and some atmosphere. But if you put 8,000 people into the Thomas and Mack Center, and that's less than half full, and it's just dead. So that's why they lost. Yes, it was a home loss, but I'm afraid UNLV is probably not going to have a home court advantage this year. Those are probably, for the most part, all neutral court games in terms of crowd impact and that sort of thing. So that was just my first worry. But then once the game started, I watched it streaming in the press box from the San Diego State football game, and what I saw was just a muddle on offense where it didn't seem like they knew what they were doing, and it seemed like they couldn't handle the ball without turning it over. A lot of fumbling, a lot of stumbling. Like, what happened?
Yeah, I would say DeYoung had the only plays where you would want to stand up and clap. He had, I think, 4 or 5 blocks. A few of those were like, I wanted him to do the Dikembe Mutombo finger. He had a transition dunk where he hung on the rim a little bit. It looked like a real play. And you could see that this kid's improved. Other than that, the offense was just stuck in neutral. You used the term muddled. I think Loyola Marymount slowed the game down. UNLV couldn't get any kind of rhythm. The guards were awful. The shooting was awful. And they were an absolute disaster on offense. And defense, I guess, was okay, right? They limited LMU to 17 first-half points. LMU shot 34%. They just, UNLV could not score, and it wasn't like a bunch of missed shots. It was. I mean, they were 2 of 18 on 3, but it was like, it was bad basketball. I told my dad after the game that this may be the worst UNLV team I've ever seen.
I saw the big response on Twitter for people like coming to me and commenting, and seems like people are not impressed with Noah Robotham in his debut. I think he was 0 of 6 from the field, 5 or 6 turnovers, and he's the guy that they're bringing in to be that steady point guard. He's really the only plus shooter that they have in the rotation right now. Now that Trey Woodbury is out, he's the only guy that you can trust really to knock down threes at a high rate. I mean, he's supposed to be careful with the ball and a good ball handler. Are you off the bandwagon already, or is this like one bad game that people shouldn't be panicking about? What did we see from him? Did you get the sense it was like just a flukish bad performance, or is this something that we need to worry about?
I have a feeling Brewer and I are going to be on different sides of this one, and I saw people freaking out about that, too. I will announce right now, I want all of the Noah Robotham stock. I don't care that the guy was terrible in his first game. Yeah, the stakes are higher. Everyone's paying attention because it's game one, but I just, I believe in the kid. I think, you know, from what little I do know about this team, I know that he's going to be a pretty trustworthy offensive player. You're not going to see him go 1-for-8, made 1-3, 1-for-7, all the turnovers. I just think he's going to get better on that end. Maybe if you're a little bit worried about his defense, I could see that. But I am just, of all the reasons to be concerned, I don't know. I'm not concerned about Noah Robotham. So I'm totally on the second end of your question of not being not overreacting to the first game.
He was just tentative. You know, and when you're a point guard and you're a senior, I hate that word. You're supposed to be an alpha dog. You're supposed to be a leader, and he was just tentative. And this was Loyola Marymount, and I mean,
is that surprising? Because you go probably way back to his career at Gorman, and that's been, you know, one of his big things is he's the leader, he's the guy who takes charge, and
yeah,
like that's his thing.
You know, he was the Gatorade Player of the Year here. Here's the deal, but at Gorman, they were always better than whomever they played. And he always had, like, Chase Jeter or Steven Zimmerman to give the ball to, or he was on a team with Shabazz Muhammad. And when you're running and gunning and you're that much better than a team, you know, it's going to be easier. And I just
– his last year he didn't have that guy, right? He was their best player.
He was their best player. It was like he and, I think, Rashad Muhammad. But I think the thing is, it's like – you look at who's on the floor, right? And you're like, God, who's going to score right now? You know?
They have a lot of lineups where you look out there and it's four guys who can't shoot. And then one, like Noah Robotham, is like the one shooter out there. And it's hard to win.
Who can
like that.
Shoot? And why didn't Bryce Hamilton play a lot?
That I can't tell you.
It was the kid's birthday. Let him play. Let him run, for crying out loud.
He's more of a mid-range shooter, but he is one of those guys that might develop into a three-point shooter by the end of the year.
But is he semi-athletic? Because I looked at that team, Grimala, and I'm like, where's the Jimmys and Joes at? And that was, I mean, and I love, you guys know this. I'm a UNLV guy. I was born and raised here. This is my team that I grew up with that I loved, and I don't want to overreact. I don't want to be like that guy in our message, our little comment section, who's overreacted. But I even think, like, I've been around Marvin after losses, and he was even a little like shell shocked.
Well, the thing it's interesting that you mentioned athleticism and, you know, the Jimmys and Joes, because if you look at the UNLV roster, they have some amazing athletes, just raw athletes, and it's Mbaki Jiang, it's Jonathan Chamwa-Chachwa, it's the big men, it's these project big men, and on the perimeter, they're not that athletic. You know, guys like Bryce Hamilton, he's a skill guy. He's not an athlete. Trey Woodbury is a skill guy. He's not an athlete. Noah Robotham is a skill guy. He's not an athlete. And it's just interesting the way that the college basketball and basketball in general is going. Your perimeter guys, yes, you want them to be skilled and shoot threes, but all of UNLV's athleticism is focused, you know, under the basket with these raw, unskilled big men that they're developing.
It's like Georgetown of the 1980s with, like, Ewing and Alonzo Mourning and...
But you can't build an offense around those back-to-the-basket guys anymore, really. I mean, UNLV did it last year, and they were, you know, pretty good at it. But it's just, if you look at the trend in the game, it's like it's very hard to build a competent offense when you don't have shooting and you don't have those players on the perimeter. And UNLV's roster is sort of inverted right now, and maybe that's a recruiting thing.
You know, and fortunately for UNLV, it was just one game, even though you could be an alarmist and say, okay, say they do go on a memorable run and – they come up one game short in the Mountain West, and now you got to look at their resume for the tournament, and you've got a loss to LMU and a strength of schedule that's in the 300s.
And I do have to bring up, I believe it was last week on this podcast, I think you said something like they might as well just fold the program if they lose one of these first six games, which I guaranteed you they would. Well, that was a pretty easy. That wasn't much of a sweat.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you're being a little more reasonable.
But I mean,
in one
if you would have looked at Loyola Marymount, you would have been in the layup line. You would have been like, all right, well, let's get the car started. This is a dub. You know what I'm saying? And then they go out there.
But that being said, you texted me within 5 minutes of the start of the game, and you're like, I don't remember your exact words, but you kind of said the writing was on the wall.
Yeah.
You thought UNLV might lose immediately.
I mean, I've never seen a UNLV team. And, Grimala, I told you earlier today, I've been going to Rebel games since I was a kid at the convention center. I've seen them all, baby, right? Freddie, Mark Wade, all the Jimmys and Joes, right? This team, bro, was like, My God, the offensive, it was just, here, you take the ball, you pass it to him, throw it into this guy, Brick City, back on defense, LMU, you pass it to you, you pass it to you, dribble, dribble off my leg. Okay, you try now. You guys dribble up, dribble, dribble. Oh, sorry, I ran into you. Here, you take the ball. There's no shots. You got to shoot the ball.
There's no, I hear what you're saying, and I know exactly. There's
they didn't have 50 points until Robotham banged one in. The minute to go, 50 points, UNLV running Rebels. They didn't run anywhere.
This is what I was waiting for. I didn't know why it took so long to get to here.
There's no superior, like, just eye-popping guy that you can just tell, even when they're in their warm-up, you know, jerseys and the warm-up pants, where you go, oh, wow, look at that guy. He's amazing.
Yeah, Travell Beck.
There's no guy that
touches the ball 58 times.
There's no guy that just takes the ball, rips through the defense, and makes a great play. They don't have one of those guys yet, so I get it. And, I mean, ideally, you want several of them.
Where are they coming? Are they going to pop out of the sky, Kamala?
I don't. They're trying to develop them.
Well, and to Marvin's credit, he's developed DeJong.
DeJong looks like he has.
DeJong, I think, is a good player. He's going to be a good player for this team, a good four-year guy. Love his energy, love his defense, rim protector, evolving offensively. Should he be your starting center right now? I don't know.
I said that Jiang and Justin has a chance to be better than Justin and McCoy was last year.
Well, McCoy was...
And that's mostly on the defense. Like, the defense will make up for it because Jiang is just light years ahead of McCoy defensively.
Yeah, and McCoy was a 6'11 guy who would not foul in an entire game.
He would not challenge shots. Like, people would drive into the lane, and he didn't have the foot speed to, you know, maneuver and get in front of guys and challenge shots, whereas Jiang has that. I did a predictions column before the game.
Very popular.
And one of the predictions I made was, will UNLV's three-point streak continue through the season? And they made two against Loyola Marymount. I think I'm kind of concerned that it might not last. You have to be, right?
I'm praying the rosary before every game, Gramala. There's no chance.
For maybe those that didn't see the prediction, I'm assuming you went with a yes.
Yes, said yes. They will survive the season and go into the thing. It's like if Robotham doesn't hit one, which against Loyola Marymount, he was 0-6. If he doesn't hit a three-pointer, there are not a lot of guys that are going to step up and hit one. Then you're hoping that Clyburn makes one, and he's a guy that will go games at a time without producing. And
Robotham's shots were so high, Gramala, it like hit off a Tarkanian's jersey and landed down. It's like the highest arch in a shot. And just the streak is in trouble. Right. I mean, the emergency streak. I mean,
Ray Brewer, shooting coach. Yeah, I still think yes would have to be a slight favorite, but I agree. I mean, just because of the day and age of basketball,
it's impossible to think. It's impossible to think of a team not hitting a three-pointer.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
That's why. But I agree with you guys. It's in trouble. But I think like if my life depended on it, I would still probably say yes because they're gonna. It's basketball in 2018. You're gonna get threes up. And I feel like now it's such a thing all the players know about it. Aren't they going to start bombing at the end of the game if they don't have one?
But it's two things, really. It's one, they don't have a lot of shooters. And two, they don't emphasize the three-point shot. They don't take a lot of three-pointers. So you're only giving yourself 10 to 15 attempts per game, probably, under Menzies. And, I mean, if you're a good three-point shooting team, you know,
you make
6 of 15 is good, you know? 6 of 15, 7 of 15 is great. And if you have a bad shooting night and you only attempt 12 on a low-end night, then you're...
Would Saturday be labeled as a bad shooting night, or is that just the norm?
I mean, you got to hope it's a bad shooting night, but we don't know. But we don't know because, I mean, Robotham is the only guy who really underperformed expectations that game. He took 6.
Hardy underperform?
He's not a three-point shooter.
Well, what is he?
He's supposed to be a driver and attacker of the basket. But he's been having trouble, you know, creating those angles to the basket. So. He's not a guy that's going to rain 4 three-pointers on you in a game. That's why one of the things to bring back one of your favorite players, Jovan Mohring, he had his struggles, and he would go ice cold at times, but he attempted three-pointers. He stretched the floor, and teams had to defend him out there.
Jovan Mohring would be Kobe Bryant on this team.
There's no one out there that teams have to respect anymore except Noah Robotham, and he's not really a volume three-point shooter.
Well, the tape's out on that, unfortunately. So
that's my number one – biggest concern for the entire season is three-point shooting. Will they take enough, and will they make enough? That's it.
makes sense to me.
Shake and bake, yeah.
They're back in action. This is Monday. They're back in action Tuesday night against Riverside.
Another like-minded opponent should be a nail-biter.
I feel like Loyola is a little bit better than Riverside, just looking at the numbers. This should be a game they win, I would say.
Offline, I got to tell you about a night I spent at Riverside, UC Riverside. Okay. I was there one night for Midnight Madness. It was a great, great story. Anyways.
Well, yeah, before we move on to football, just anything, what do we need to look for in this Riverside game on Tuesday night?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, Menzies did a good job of saying, listen, we're better than this. We need to be better than this. We're going to use this as a teaching moment. And maybe this game against Loyola was just a real crap first game. You parlay that, though, with the exhibition game, starting to get a little worried. What kind of progress are we going to see here? I think that to me is curiosity killed the cat.
I want to see Shakur Justin step up in this game. He's 12 points in the opener. He's the go-to guy now. That's not good enough. He's got to demand the ball. He's got to score. He's got to be assertive. He's got to score. He has to put points on the board.
I mean, there were some plays where I didn't even realize it was on the team.
This team is going to have trouble scoring. You're the go-to guy. You shot 60% last year. You've got to make it happen. Like, when your team is struggling and they're going through droughts, and Justin has got to get the ball. He's got to beat his man. He's got to put it in the basket somehow, or he's got to get to the free throw line and knock him down. That's what it means to be a go-to guy. And I know he sort of issues that label, and he doesn't want to be the focus of the offense because he wants to be, you know, a team player. But sometimes what the team needs is for you to step up and, you know, take it on your shoulders and deliver. UC Riverside is a team he should be able to be productive against in the paint. So I want to see Justin more involved in the offense. I want to see him getting the ball and doing more with it when he gets it. You know, don't look to pass immediately. Look to score. And then if they cut you off, dribble it back out and try again. You know, he doesn't need to be hot potatoing the ball around. You're the man. You've got to play like that, and you've got to help this team offensively.
All right.
Yeah, sounds good. So Brewer mentioned this at the start, and it got me interested, so I looked it up. If you had the foresight to put in a parlay on San Diego State or UNLV against San Diego State and Loyola Marymount on Saturday night, $100 would have paid $3,670. And most of that actually was from UNLV football's win. UNLV knocks off San Diego State in one I don't think many people saw coming. The Rebels were winless in conference play, but kind of get their brightest moment of the season in holding off the Aztecs. Mike, you were there at that game. I got to think you were pretty shocked by the result.
Shocked by the result and shocked by how it happened, because anytime you play like a sports game, there's a potential for a fluke to happen where, you know, there's a kickoff return fumble by San Diego State, or they play bad, or they turn it over a bunch of times, and there's these flukish plays that happen, and you pull out a game that you shouldn't win. But through 60 minutes, that didn't seem to be the case. It wasn't like UNLV shouldn't have won that game. They outplayed San Diego State for most of the night. Their defense was better than San Diego State's offense. UNLV moved the ball. They ran it not like we were used to, you know, explosively through the first half of the season, but they ran it well enough. Gillum threw for, you know, 200-plus yards. He made some big plays in the passing game. UNLV was the better team. And then just to have that payoff where they win in the end, it was surprising the way – how good they looked after, you know, 7 weeks of playing so badly and allowing 50 points every week and Gillum throwing four interceptions, and how bad they looked leading up to it, and then to play that well in that spot on the road in a place they hadn't won in 20 years against a good team, that was surprising almost as much as the result.
Yeah, and if you just look at the UNLV-San Diego State rivalry the last whatever years, right, Pumphrey ran crazy against UNLV. Rashad Penny, obviously two guys who've been drafted in the NFL, ran crazy against UNLV, and I remember last year I covered the game. It was a few days after the shooting, and San Diego State might have run for like 400 yards. And considering UNLV's defense has been as bad as it was, for them to play like that defensively, you know, what was the difference from Saturday to the previous whatever? They gave up like 500 yards in four straight weeks or whatever. What was the difference from San Diego State, Mike, to the past stretch?
I thought at first San Diego State was having trouble running the ball, and I thought maybe it was because they were working, you know, their running back, you know, back into the rotation, and their quarterback had been injured, and they were, you know, trying to work him back in. So I thought maybe it was just like a timing and rhythm thing on San Diego State's end. But as the game went on, UNLV was just pushing them around up front. They were getting in the backfield. They were tackling for loss. They got three sacks. They were just aggressively in the backfield. Even San Diego State had a play, a fourth and one down on the goal line where they ran it in. And even on that play, UNLV had three or four guys in the backfield surrounding the running back, and it was just a great run to elude them and find the space. They just played really well in the running game. Tony Sanchez said that, you know, they were focused on stopping the run and they were trying to crowd the line of scrimmage. But Sanchez said the biggest thing was, unlike in every other game that they've played for the past 2 months, they did not get beat in those one-on-one down-the-field situations where pretty much every time a UNLV defensive back is left one-on-one down the field, they're going to lose the battle, either give up a long completion or commit a penalty because they're just not athletic and quick enough. They're not explosive on that. You know, they don't have the athletes on the defensive backfield. But they didn't really get burned by San Diego State, whether it was, you know, luck or good play. They gave up one long touchdown, like a 35-yard touchdown pass. But the rest of the game, they didn't get burned for crowding the line of scrimmage. So that, I think, was maybe the biggest factor. You know, the fact that San Diego State couldn't take advantage by beating them for big plays.
Yeah, to be honest, that part, as bad as UNLV's defense has been, their defensive performance surprises me less than the offense, just because San Diego State's offense has kind of been anemic all year. You know, it's had its moments, but I expected a low-scoring game. It's kind of what I described in the Talking Picks column. I just would not think they were going to score. I thought that they'd have Gilliam, we know, is turnover-prone. Gilliam, still can't say his name right, and he's earned it now. I don't know. I was more surprised offensively than defensively, even though the offense has shown signs of life. I do think San Diego State has some severe limitations on that side of the ball, and clearly UNLV schemed for it and was set up, and shout out to them. The biggest thing this says to me, you know, as the speculation on Tony Sanchez's job reached its high point last week, I think it's really big in showing that this team definitely did not quit on him. They had not given up on the season. Like, how often do we see a team in this position just pack it in for the last 3 weeks and just get destroyed? I mean, even if they would have lost a close game, it would have shown they didn't quit on him. But to win, it shows that, you know, the players are still behind Tony Sanchez, and I don't think that's meaningless.
Yeah, Tony's been saying that for a few weeks. You know, the team hasn't quit, and we're still playing hard. And when he says that, you're thinking, well, they're giving up 50 points every week, so I don't know, like, how do you judge something like that? But then when they come out and play like this, I think it's pretty safe to say that, you know, whatever Tony's message is to the team, they're still buying it. They still are playing hard. And it's interesting that you win this game, depending on what you think of, you know, Hawaii and Reno, you know, 4-8, 5-7, maybe back on the table for UNLV at this point, even if you get Armani back at some point this week.
I mean, for me, I don't even care about the Hawaii game. It's all UNR, and I think the fan base feels the same way. For the fan base to entertain keeping Tony another year, I think you got to beat Reno. It's a huge game. You got to get the cannon back. It's got to be on your home field. 2 years ago when Reno was here, UNLV just got blown out. Their effort wasn't great. And this is a game where Reno's a better team than I thought they'd be. And you just got to win that game. You know, I hate to say what could have been, but, you know, giving up the New Mexico and San Jose State games were so winnable. If they would have played like they did against San Diego State, now we could be talking about an outside shot of squeezing into a bowl game. And you know, considering Armani was out, you know, it wouldn't have been that big of a sin. I think, of course, Tony's already done enough to merit another year just on the fundraising and some of the infrastructure things he's changed. But you'd really like to see a great game against Reno.
If they go out and they beat Reno and they finish, you know, 4-8 with a win over Reno, that doesn't seem like the disaster of a season. It's a disappointment because you were bowl or bust before the season. But if you go 4-8, you know, you win one fewer game, but you beat your rival. That's not a disaster of a season, especially when you say, you know, we lost our starting quarterback for half the year. It doesn't seem, in that perspective, it doesn't seem like the disaster that it looked like when you lost 7 in a row and things looked like they were going to snowball and it was going out of control. So to Tony Sanchez's credit, that's back on the table now. If he wins, you know, one of these final two games, especially if he wins that Reno game, the season doesn't look that bad for him. It doesn't look like a fireable offense.
I think what you're saying is right. You kind of answered it at the end, but I was saying, are we kind of skipping over one game? Because, of course, they do go to Hawaii this weekend. We're always playing what if on this podcast, so I'm just wondering kind of confusing-wise, what happens if they beat Hawaii and then lose to Reno? Obviously, you would want it the other way. There's a stronger case, but do you think that would erode some of the confidence in him?
It depends how that Reno game plays out. If they lose 55-3 and there's four people in the stands, you know, versus a game that's slightly closer, you know, I think to me the Hawaii game is whatever, just a bridge. It's a long trip you got to take and a time zone to get backwards on to play your rival at home. You know, for me, that's the only game that matters, getting the cannon. And as crazy as it sounds, and you guys are outsiders, so you don't understand it. But
wow.
You are. You're
excluded.
From
excluded.
You're from right. Who won that KU K-State game?
Let's not even talk about
it. Oh, really?
K-State barely. But KU totally outplayed them. The coach who just got fired still won't go for it on 4th and inches, punting at midfield. It's just ridiculous. Whatever. K-State won barely.
So, I mean, for a lot of locals, the only game that matters is this Reno game. And I talk to somebody who's been here his whole life, who grew up, you know, being taught, rightfully so, to hate Northern Nevada. and you guys laugh and you think it's funny. You don't understand that, you know, there's a huge disparity in money spent at UNR versus UNLV academically. You know, obviously Carson City's close to Reno. A lot of lawmakers favor, you know, UNR because they think it's Harvard or something, when really it's the same school, just with ASS backwards people running it. And so this, you know, we learned at a young age it was important to beat Reno. And, you know, Tony Sanchez knows that. You know, go back to his first year, he beat Reno. He got excited. You remember that? Jumped over the partition. It was like he won the Super Bowl.
I remember how – I don't really remember his response. I remember you being so fired up. You came back and it was like –
great.
You were more excited than when you came back after you got married, I think.
Well, yeah.
Hopefully Carla's not listening.
Nah, she's not listening.
Okay,
so, yeah. Yeah. So anyways, I just, to me, all boats run to the Reno game.
I mean, that makes sense. They are 6.5-point underdogs at Hawaii on Saturday. Teams are pretty evenly matched, but this does seem like a tough ask going to Hawaii. High-powered offense. Offense does a lot differently in San Diego State. I don't know. What are your expectations for this game, Mike?
Well, I was going to ask a question. If you want to put all your eggs in that Reno game, how would you play this game coming up with Armani Rogers and Max Gillum? Because Sanchez still believes that Gillum gives them the best chance to win until Armani is 100% healthy. But I get would you rather play Armani Rogers in this game over Gillum to get him up to speed for that Reno game? Because, I mean, Armani's not going to come in and throw for 240 yards like Gillum did to win at San Diego State. Mm-hmm. Gillum probably gives you the best chance to win this week. But if you play Armani, you know, a little bit for a half or for, you know, three quarters in relief or whatever you do, Armani might give you the best chance next week against Reno. So what do you want to do?
Are you hinting that Max may have supplanted Armani?
No, okay. No, absolutely not. But 100% healthy Max Gillum gives you a better chance to win than 50% healthy Armani Rogers. If Armani Rogers can't run, he's not bringing anything to your offense because he's not going to throw for 240 like Gillum.
I think you need to ask yourself, is Rogers going to be 100% for Reno? If he's not, you got to get Gillum as many reps and keep his momentum.
But the issue is, so Sanchez keeps saying that Armani, you know, we've got to get him up to game speed. He's still not running with the full explosion that that we're used to seeing. But he's not going to get up to game speed unless he plays. And if he doesn't play this week against Hawaii, he's not going to be 100% in game shape and game speed against Reno. So if you want him for the Reno game, you've got to commit a good chunk of this Hawaii game to playing him, even if it lowers your chance of beating Hawaii. Are you okay with that as a guy who wants to beat Reno at all costs? Are you willing to punt this game, if that's what it comes down to, in order to give you a better chance against Reno?
Now, the question is if you – it's just like in the NFL. If you take week 17 off, sometimes you muddle through the playoffs, right? And I don't think UNLV's.
I've never really bought into that theory, but that's a whole
there is
thing.
A theory though.
There
on
is
that.
A theory that
you may not agree with said
incorrectly.
Theory, but there is
in
a
several
theory.
Super Bowl teams.
And UNLV doesn't have the ability to turn it off and turn it on.
It's really interesting quandary, I guess, that I didn't really realize until Mike spelled it out. I don't know exactly how you would deal with it. I just think, I mean, you just beat San Diego State. Gillum had a very good game. I think you got to go with him to start. Now, does it mean that Armani's ready enough to go that you throw him in there for a few series? I think that would make sense. But, I mean, you got to go with Gillum at the beginning, right, if he's not 100%.
If I had to guess right now, and Tony Sanchez has not done his Monday press conference, he'll give an update, you know, usually on Wednesdays for, you know, health-wise and that sort of stuff. And then as closer to game time, you may get word again. But if I had to guess right now, I would guess Gillum is going to start against Hawaii. And he'll probably say Rogers, you know, we'll try to work him in. We'll see how he's doing in practice. And if he feels, if we get the clearance from the doctors and we feel like he's running enough to be productive, then we'll play him at some point in the game. But, I mean, it's vague. It's like you don't know, and I'm sure the coaches are trying to play it by ear, and it's all touch and go. I would like to see Armani Rogers get out there for significant playing time just because, you know, he's the future of the program. It's still Rogers. Like, Rogers is the guy going forward. Gillum is great, and I think he's, you know, as a backup. He's good as a backup. He comes in. He's not going to win you a ton of games, but he's shown that he can do some things, enough to be a backup. I want to see Rogers up to full speed by the end of the year, and I want to see him get the start against Reno and play every snap. So whatever it takes to get Armani Rogers ready for that game is what I would do as the coach. I don't know how Tony Sanchez is going to do it.
Yeah, that's 100% where I would lean. I think that's what you need to do. We'll see how it plays out. Of course, we're working with very incomplete information. I say as much bad about Tony as you want, but he knows a lot more where these guys are at, and I think that this is a case where he's going to ultimately make the right decision. Any parting thoughts, Brewer?
I'm focused on an email I'm sending right now, so I've said enough.
All right, so the truth is out there. All right, so UNLV basketball, a couple games this week. See if they can turn things around. And stunningly, we'll see if football can keep this going after knocking off San Diego State 27-24. For Mike and Ray, I'm Case. Thanks for listening to the Rebel Room.